The last part of this section that begins with slide 23 is devoted to understand how the numerical functions that we have described in these lessons can be implemented into a controller. Remembering that for us the controller is always a software code written and executed onto a microprocessor. This means that we are trying to learn how to implement controllers in a numerical way. Numerical controllers, in fact, allow a very accurate signal elaboration if the sampling frequency is sufficiently high compared to the dynamics of the signal that we are acquiring. But also, they allow to modify the control parameters on the basis of the monitored process conditions in a manner that is more quick than we could achieve using analog controllers. And this requirement is very critical when a complex elaboration must be performed on a variable or on a group of variables, like in the case of integration, derivation, but of course even more complex functions. And in case this elaboration could influence the process control. For example, let's consider a very simple example like the one proposed by the evaluation of the integration function. In the picture we have a curve that expresses the behavior of a function in the time that is sampled periodically with the sampling period TS. That means that the integration function of FT in DT from a starting moment TA up to a final moment TB will turn out into a summation of the product of the all samples of the function fi multiplied by the amount of the period ts over the sample instance that are represented by the integer numerical values a, b minus 1. Clearly, this is evident from the picture, but also the intuition suggests to us that this is true. The approximation improves when the width of the period is small, or better, the relationship between the period and the maximum frequency of the signal is small. For example, the product of TS time Fmax. As the picture shows, the integral function is equivalent to add all the rectangles that have as basis the duration of the sampling period and as height the value of the function in the sampling moment. This if the curve is not flat, brings an error that is represented by those blank areas that are within the curve and the top of the rectangles. A better approximation could consist in the interpolation of the curve with straight lines fitting the sampling points. In other words, we could consider a new integration function that is given by the summation, again with the same extremities A and B minus 1 of the average of the sample points Fi plus 1 plus Fi divided by 2 time the sampling period. In other words, we are considering the value of the function into a sampling point. We consider the value of the function in the successive sampling point, we calculate the mean, and we multiply that mean by the period, and the summation of all these values corresponds to the new idea of integration function. Clearly, taking a look to the picture, we understand intuitively that this is better because the average will allow to consider a certain part of those triangles that the previous method neglected. But developing the summation, we can split it into two other summations. One applied to Fi plus 1 divided by 2 times Ts, and the other applied to Fi divided by 2 times Ts. But now we can, operate some transformations on these two summations. For example, the first can be expressed into a different way, because if we consider Fi instead of Fi plus 1, we can say that the previous summation over Fi plus 1 can be considered equivalent to a similar summation with the same extremities but applied to the values Fi, to which must be added Fb divided by 2 times Ts minus Fa divided by 2 multiplied by Ts. In other words, if we change the index I plus 1 in I, keeping the same interval, it is clear that Fi will arrive to Fb minus 1. Instead, in the previous summation, Fi plus 1 arrived to Fb. So the transformation needs to consider also this term that otherwise would be neglected, would be lost. Conversely, if we transform Fi plus 1 in Fi, clearly, if before the summation on Fi plus 1 arrived to Fa plus 1 as the last term considered, in this case we include one term more, that is Fa. So this wrong term included must be cancelled, must be subtracted from the new summation, and this is the reason why we introduce this expression minus Fa divided by 2 Ts. The previous summation of Fi divided by 2 Ts over Ab minus 1 values remains and can be added to the other one we have obtained, and we understand immediately that the two summations correspond to what previously we have called integration function of f of t on AB. So we can write finally integration AB plus Ts on 2 multiplying Fb minus Fa. That is the same summation as before, plus, an adjustment that is related to the difference of the first sampled value of the function and the last sampled value of the function that increases a little bit the overall value, so improving the approximation of the integration calculation. In the case of the numerical derivation, similar considerations can be made. Typically, the derivation can be performed through the so-called incremental ratio. That is, let's consider the difference between the present sample of a function and the next one, or conversely, we can also consider the present value and the previous one. And let's divide this value by the sampling period. This is the simplest way to evaluate in a numerical way the derivative function. But if the period is small, such a procedure can present possible errors due to the presence of spikes or outliers values that, for example, the noise could introduce into the function itself. And this kind of evaluation could enhance these outliers. For example, we could enlarge the interval of time between the samples. So in slide 24, we see that the numerical derivation is evaluated as the difference between two samples whose distance is twice the sampling period. And of course, the difference is divided by 2ts. But clearly, this introduces, let's say, a level of slowness in the evaluation of the derivative function, because we have to wait to sample fi, fi plus 1, and fi plus 2, and then to evaluate the function. Clearly, the more the values that are involved in such a kind of calculation, the more accurate will be the numerical derivative function. For example, in the lower part of the slide, technique is shown into which the numerical derivation is obtained through the acquisition of four samples of the function itself, f0, f1, f2, f3. Then we calculate average value that is given by the sum of all the values of the samples divided by 4, corresponding to which we can associate a theoretical time that is given by STS divided by 4, or with the simplifying, I mean the two terms, 3TS divided by 2. The numerical derivative function will be obtained by evaluating the incremental ratios that are given by the central value fm minus f0 divided by the distance in the time between the time tm associated to the center value fm and the instant into which the considered sample has been acquired. So in the specific case, fm minus f0 divided by 3/2 ts. Then fm minus f1 divided by ts half. Then f2 minus fm divided by ts half. And finally f3 minus fm divided by 3/2 time ts. All these values are added one to the other and divided by 4, since we evaluate an average derivative function. and the final value is f3 plus 3f2 minus 3f1 minus f0 divided by 6ts. That is a numerical combination of terms that will provide the average slope that interpolate the samples, in this case f0, f1, f2, f3. It will be a more accurate way to calculate the derivative function. However, this approach needs more samples and, of course, the presence, let's say, of a buffer into which these samples are stored, but this is clearly a very easy thing. What is, let's say, the main drawback is the delay with which the calculation is performed, that typically assigns an average value fm into a theoretical instant of time 3 half ts to the derivative function with respect, let's say, the instantaneous variation of the slope of the curve that we would evaluate, and that clearly in this way we cannot estimate instantaneously. Going ahead with our explanation of how numerical controllers implement the functions that we have seen in the previous slides, let's analyze what can happen with the differential equations. First of all, we could observe that every function can be represented as a ratio. A ratio among polynomials in S without pure delays that typically represent the input to a block that implements a certain function and the corresponding output. This is what is shown in slide 25 in the upper part, where we write US divided ES. Consider that we are always assumed to be in the domain of the frequency, in the Laplace domain, I mean. And this ratio will be, generally speaking, equal to a polynomial A of S divided by another polynomial B of S. In these polynomials, in these functions, we can find terms like SE or S square E that correspond to the first order or the second order derivative functions, but they don't represent a problem for the numerical implementation, since they can be represented and calculated through the evaluation of the correspondent incremental ratios. That is, if we have to evaluate SE, simply we will evaluate the difference between present sample and previous value and previous sample of E divided by the sampling period. And if we have to evaluate the square S times E, it is the second order derivative function, we will implement the calculation of the incremental ratio of the incremental ratios. In a very simple way, this is shown in the formula in slide 25. En minus En minus 1 divided by Ts minus En minus 1 minus En minus 2 divided by Ts, and all this evaluation, this calculation, divided by the sampling period. So it is clear that every term in the numerator is the first order derivative calculated in an instant and in a previous instant. So the numerator divided by the sampling period represent the second order derivative function as incremental ratio of the two first order derivative functions calculated at the present instant and at the previous sampling instant. This expression turns out to be En minus 2 En minus 1 plus En minus 2 divided by t power 2. And this gives us a message, that is, we can calculate derivative functions of whatever order we need. Simply with this method that can be iterated as much as we want. The only thing that we need to have in mind is that the sequence of the samples that must be stored with respect to the present, the last one, clearly is as longer as bigger is the order of the derivative function we want to calculate. In other words, we see that for calculating the second order derivative function, we need to store three samples of the E function. Clearly, if we want the third or the fourth order, this list will be longer. Apart this, and the correspondent delay, that of course is necessary to wait for acquiring all the necessary values, the implementation is quite straightforward. In other words, derivation turns out in recursive operations on the function E in the different sampling moments. The equation U divided by E behaves in a linear relationship among several samples of the input and of the output, of course. At the beginning, the values En can be set to zero, so the initial value of the output will be not the right ones, but at the end they will converge. And considering that the velocity with which the microprocessor typically performs the calculation is very faster with respect to the, let's say, velocity of the answer of the process, even this drawback can be considered not dramatic in terms of accuracy in the control of the process itself. The slide 26 shows a very simple application of the concepts that we have now described. We have a circuit that can be described as a low-pass filter whose transfer function in the Laplace domain is 1 divided by 1 plus s tau. Tau is the time constant of the circuit that is typically equal to the product of the resistor times the capacitor. By developing the equation that is shown in the slide, we will obtain that the output U plus U multiplied by S tau is equal to E. And now from this expression we can pass to the numerical form by considering the only, let's say, interesting quantity, interesting entity in such equation, that is S tau U, the derivative function. In fact, U is transformed into the nth sample of the output magnitude U. E will be transformed as well in the nth sample, and the derivative function will be replaced, numerically speaking, I mean, with the incremental ratio, that is tau, that multiplies the difference between the present sample and the previous one divided by tau s. And after small passages, we obtain the final expression that says that the present output of such a kind of a filter is equal to the previous output plus the difference between the input and the previous output divided by 1 plus tau on t. TS, the sampling period. So the implementation of the filter is numerically obtained through a recursive expression, a recursive calculation that requires to keep in memory the last previous output of the filter, the constant tau, and of course the value of the sampling period TS, together with the value of the input to the filter itself. The only remark that we have to consider is the value of 1 divided by 1 plus tau divided by TS. Since this quantity is a coefficient that is multiplied by the difference between the input and the previous value, and this total amount is added to the previous value itself, we can wonder if this quantity doesn't diverge. But the coefficient is lower than 1. So every iteration, this contribution basically decreases. So it doesn't bring any kind of, let's say, dangerous issue in the calculation that is performed by the microprocessor. Moreover, the physical calculation of 1 divided 1 plus tau on TS can be calculated once and forever, since all the terms of which this term is made of are constant. The slide 27 continues in this overview of the controlling functions that we have already seen, just to understand how they can be implemented into a microprocessor in a numerical form. The controller that is shown in this slide is the non-interactive PID, and in particular the function that we are considering is the typical one of such a controller without the low-pass filtering term that we have already learned to numerically implement in the previous slide. So let's concentrate on the first three terms, that is the proportional, the integral, and the derivative functions, that are implemented as three parallel blocks. So if we say that E is the input and U is the output, we see in the picture that we have a K block, better, a block that implements only a constant K that corresponds to the proportional part of the controller, so as the output UPN of this block will be K multiplied by the nth sample of the input EN. Then we have another block in parallel that implements the integral function K divided by STI. The output in this case will be STI multiplied by UIN equal to KEN. N represents for all the terms that are shown in this slide the nth sample of that particular magnitude. This function can be more conveniently transformed in TI on TS. TS is the sampling period that multiplies UIN minus UIN minus 1 equal to KEN. That is, the derivative function has been replaced by the incremental ratio. From here, we will obtain that UIN is equal to UIN minus 1 plus K TS on TI multiplied by EN. So the integral part of the controller features output that is the sum of the previous value of the output plus a constant that multiplies the present input sample. And finally, the derivative term, so we have a block that implements the function kstd, the relative output udn will be ktd on ts time the difference between en and en minus 1. That is, simply we have replaced the derivative function with the corresponding incremental ratio of the input variable e. Clearly, all these three contributions are added under the general output u of this part of the controller will be the sum of these three terms. Then we remember that we needed to add a successive filtering block with time constant tf that can be put successively the output u, and we know how to implement it because we have already described the numerical implementation in the previous slide. If instead we want to analyze the numerical implementation of the interactive PID controller, we have to consider the expression that we have already seen, featuring two zeros located at one on TE and one on TD in frequency, and two poles that are located in the origin and in one on TF. In this case, just to highlight the gain at high frequency, we replace the pole at high frequency TF with the expression gamma TD. In other words, we relate the pole in high frequency with the weight of the derivative function, of the derivative part of the controller. And the expression that we have chosen to do this is gamma TD equal to TF, where gamma is the value of the gain at high frequency. In fact, in the expression that is presented in slide 28, when S tends to infinite, the elements that survive, let's say, are those whose coefficient is S squared, that are Ti time Td and Ti time gamma Td. So, by simplifying the terms that are equal, the value of the expression when S becomes very high is 1 on gamma. And we said that 1 on gamma must be limited to avoid a gain too high in high frequency, and to avoid that the controller compromises the stability of the system. Therefore, gamma must be minor than 1. Concerning the implementation of the controller, and looking at such a kind of a formula, we can see that it is possible to split such an expression in two blocks connected in a cascade. Each of the two blocks will feature only one zero and one pole. Looking at the slide, we see, for example, that the input can be considered as provided to a block with a transfer function 1 plus STI divided by STI. The output of this block will in turn be entered into another block with the transfer function 1 plus STD divided by 1 plus S gamma TD. And then we have the output. The two blocks, therefore, implemented together will correspond to the classic function that we have already seen of the PID controller. Let's concentrate on the implementation of the second one that presents some issues that need comment, while leaving the first one to a similar implementation. In fact, it is evident that after having carried out the numerical representation of the second one, the first one that is simpler will be very easy to be calculated in turn. So let's consider the transfer function 1 plus STD divided by 1 plus STD time gamma. This ratio is equal to the relationship between the output U and the input F. Developing the expressions, we obtain F plus STDF equal to U plus STD U gamma, and replacing the derivative terms with their correspondent incremental ratios, we have UN plus gamma TD that multiplies UN minus UN minus 1 divided by TS equal to FN plus TD that multiplies Fn minus 1 divided by Ts. Once more, we remember that Ts is the sampling period and that we represent the input and the output entities F and U with the corresponding sampling points taken at the instant n and at the instant n minus 1. Finally, the expression of the output at the nth sample instant will be gamma that multiplies td on ts un minus 1 plus fn that multiplies 1 plus td on ts minus Fn minus 1 that multiplies Td on Ts. All these terms are divided by 1 plus gamma Td on Ts. Now, looking at the fact that not rarely such a kind of numerical calculations are carried out by microprocessors with 8, 16 data buses, due to the fact that often the control of a process is assigned to a low power and low size microprocessor, embedded microprocessor, we can wonder if in doing these calculations, in particular adding a quantity to another quantity, then making a subtraction, we run the risk to have an overflow or not. Look at the fact that we have to evaluate if any single term of this equation can be less or greater than 1. Because clearly, if in particular the coefficients are greater than 1, we run the risk that iteration after iteration, un or fn or fn minus 1 or un minus 1 increases without control and finally makes the equation to diverge.
Let's consider these coefficients and let's consider in particular the relationship for the first one between gamma td on ts divided by 1 plus gamma td on ts. And this clearly is a term that by definition is lower than 1. So the first coefficient probably doesn't imply the possibility of an overflow. Concerning the second one, we have to take into consideration what is the relationship between 1 plus td on ts divided by 1 plus gamma td on ts. That means what is the relationship between the numerator and the denominator that is basically established by the value of gamma. We said a few minutes before that gamma must be less than 1 just to keep the high frequency gain of the controller limited. And this means that the numerator will be potentially greater than the denominator, because Td divided by Ts will be, in such a hypothesis, greater than gamma Td divided by Ts, gamma less than 1. So the second term, iteration of iteration, can augment and represents a potential overflow source. The same consideration can be done by considering the last term, fn minus 1, multiplying td on ts and divided by 1 plus gamma td on ts. Again, td on ts will be greater than gamma td on ts. Okay, there is at the denominator plus 1, but probably gamma td on ts will be greater than 1. So, also the last term is a potential source for having an overflow. Let's consider, however, that such a kind of expression can be reformulated in another way by manipulating the coefficients that are related to fn and fn minus 1. In particular, we can write that un is equal to gamma td on ts un minus 1 divided by 1 plus gamma td on ts. Then we can write fn plus fn minus fn minus 1 multiplying td on ts divided again by the same coefficient 1 plus gamma td on ts. Such a kind of new point of view changes the situation, because the second term is fn and its coefficient is not explicitly presented but is 1, and 1 divided by 1 plus gamma td on ts clearly is 1, is lower than 1. Moreover, if we consider the second term, fn minus fn minus 1 td on ts divided 1 plus gamma td on ts, okay, here we have still the same problem as before. The coefficient td on ts divided by 1 plus gamma td on ts can be greater than 1, but now is multiplied by a subtraction between fn and fn minus 1. And if f doesn't change too much between a sample and the next one, the difference between two samples will be probably not big and will compensate the coefficient that can be greater than 1. Therefore, also from this point of view, the last term of such an expression is, let's say, kept limited. We have reduced in such a way the possibility that it can provide an overflow. This is a lesson, especially for students that sometimes have to write a code that implements a numerical calculation, because the problem is really consistent, really concrete. But often it depends on the way with which we write the code. If certain critical situations can happen or not. Looking at the slide 30, we must say that this is related to the dynamic compensation, and we have included it into this overview about the methods that are used to take a system under control, but this is a topic well explained in other courses, so just for sake of completeness, we remember that if we are a function, general function, like that shown in the picture again, and the possible presence of two poles, J0 divided by 1 plus S tau 1 and 1 plus S tau 2, we are in front, we are in the presence of a potentially critical situation, because depending on the amount of the gain, the crossing of the curve in the Bode diagram with respect to the 0 dB axis can happen with a slope equal to minus 20 dB per decade or minus 40 dB per decade. And this is the situation that we know as critical, because it reduces the margin of phase and in general can compromise the stability of the system. Let's remember that the condition shown in the picture compromises the so-called asymptotic stability of the system. In other words, the capability of the system to remain stable at all the frequencies that we can consider. If, for example, again looking at the picture that is shown in the slide, the system should work stable, fixed, at a frequency that is, for example, lower than 1 on 2 pi greek tau 1, also the diagram is potentially critical, the system will be always stable, because at that frequency the gain is positive and well higher than 0 dB, I mean. Instead, the condition that we are analyzing is the asymptotic stability, into which we, let's say, pretend to have a gain that is greater than 0 dB, greater than 1, at all the possible frequencies that we can consider, or at least at those frequencies that correspond to the range of the typical working frequencies of the process that we are taking into account. What is the solution that typically we have? The first corresponds to lowerize the gain. This solution is shown in blue color. So we have a curve that is able to cross the zero axis at a point into which the slope is at least minus 1, minus 20 dB per decade, and this respects the conditions of the Bode theorem. Therefore, the system is asymptotically stable, that is, the bandwidth of frequencies at which the process can work is from theoretically 0 up to 1 divided by 2 pi Greek tau 2. This is a solution that often is practiced, is implemented. The price is that we reduce the bandwidth, that is, the interval of frequencies at which the process can work is shorter. The second solution, represented by the red curve, is called compensation or dynamic compensation. And basically, it is carried out by multiplying the transfer function we have in the picture, J0 1 divided by 1 plus S tau 1 and 1 plus S tau 2, by another function with a zero and a pole. The zero will correspond exactly to one of the poles of the function that we are considering. For example, to the second pole, 1 on 2 pi Greek as tau 2, and the pole will be generally located at a frequency that is very high, and in any case outside from the interval of frequencies into which the process we are controlling works. Therefore, the second pole of the original function is basically eliminated, and the curve, as it is shown in the picture, will continue with the same slope as before, and the crossing point with the 0 dB axis is postponed at higher frequencies, while the second pole that will be added with the new transfer function that we have included will be at a frequency so high that basically is out of the scope of the process we are controlling. Therefore, now the bandwidth has been extended, so we can say that the system is not asymptotically stable in the sense that it cannot work at all the frequencies that we can imagine, but the range into which it can work has been extended with respect before, since the crossing point of the black transfer function in the figure is clearly before the crossing point than the new red one curve after the modification we have introduced. The numerical implementation of a transfer function featuring one zero and one pole has been already explained in the previous slides, so it is very straightforward for us and doesn't present any problem.